on The Voice of America.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden will wrap up his three-day visit to Ireland with a Friday night speech in Ballina, home of his paternal ancestors on the west coast of Ireland. On Thursday, Biden became the fourth American leader after John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton to address a joint sitting of the Irish Parliament.
People of Ireland, it's so good to be back in Ireland. If you forgive the poor attempt at Irish, Tamasha Walia, I'm at home.
Highlighting Ireland's support in defending Ukraine from Russia's aggression, Biden noted how the country stood proudly with the U.S. and partners around the world, providing humanitarian support, welcoming nearly 80,000 Ukrainian refugees following the Russia invasion. A 21-year-old U.S. Air National Guardsman will make his first appearance in federal court in Boston Friday in connection with a brazen leak of hundreds of pages of classified U.S. government and military documents. The FBI said Jack Teixeira, a member of the Massachusetts Air National Guard, was taken into custody on Thursday at a residence in Dighton, Massachusetts. The leaked documents reportedly includes U.S. intelligence about the war in Ukraine and highly sensitive information about how the U.S. spies on allies and adversaries.
In South Korea, the U.S. is alleged to have collected information that suggests top Korean officials were concerned about providing artillery rounds to Ukraine, which is something that is very sensitive, especially since the U.S. has tried to build a coalition of partners to support Ukraine in its war effort. We also know that the U.S. is collecting very heavily on Russian forces and Russian intelligence officers. Now, this was something that we've known for a long time in generalities, but to get the level of specifics that are in this document leak is very rare.
That's Noman Merchant reporting. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. Could North Korea now have solid-fuel long-range missiles capable of hitting the U.S.? The AP's Lisa Dwyer has the story.
North Korea says it has tested a newly developed intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, intended to target the mainland U.S. North Korea's state media says its recent weapons test involved a new long-range missile powered by solid propellants, which it described as the most powerful piece of its growing nuclear arsenal, targeting the United States and U.S. allies in Asia. An ICBM with built-in solid propellants would be easier to move and hide and could be fired more quickly, reducing the opportunities for opponents to detect and counter the launch. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Sudan's military has warned about potential clashes with the country's powerful paramilitary force, which it said deployed troops in the capital and other cities. The military said on Thursday that the buildup of the rapid support force in Khartoum, Sudan's capital, and elsewhere in the country has come without approval or coordination with the armed forces leadership. Tensions between the army and the paramilitary have escalated in recent months over the issue of how the RSF would be integrated into the military. More rains was in the forecast in South Florida as crews continue to try to mop up and dry out from fierce rain and flooding that closed down a major airport in Fort Lauderdale. We get more from the AP's Jackie Quinn.
Motorist Amanda Valentine says her car was lifted by floodwaters on a major Fort Lauderdale thoroughfare at the height of the rainstorm Wednesday.
I thought it was going to drop because I couldn't get my door open. At first.
Police say they had to help hundreds of people trapped in vehicles as cars floated away.
Oh my God.
More than 2 feet of rain was recorded around Fort Lauderdale's International Airport. Mark Winter was hoping to fly home to Seattle.
Water was coming up over the wall into the tunnel that you pass through to go to the rental car return. And it looked like a waterfall.
An airport worker told him no flights were going in or out, so he slept on the floor in the terminal. Broward County schools are closed through the weekend. Some of them took on water as well. I'm Jackie Quinn.
And protesters opposing President Emmanuel Macron's unpopular plan to raise the retirement age from 64 to marched throughout the cities in Paris and other areas of France in a final show of anger before a crucial decision on whether the measure meets constitutional standards. For more news, please join us, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Today is Friday, April 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. arrests a suspect in connection with a classified defense information leak.
Today, the Justice Department arrested Jack Douglas Teixeira in connection with an investigation into alleged unauthorized removal, retention, and transmission of classified national defense information.
North Korea fires an intercontinental ballistic missile, prompting evacuation warnings in Japan.
Emergency alert sounded on Japan's northern island of Hokkaido following a North Korean missile launch.
An aid worker in Ethiopia says Amhara regional forces have displaced thousands of ethnic Tigrayans from disputed territory. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Federal agents arrested a Massachusetts Air National Guard member who has emerged as a main person of interest in the disclosure of highly classified military documents on the Ukraine war. Attorney General Merrick Garland made the announcement at the Justice Department Thursday. The Guardsman was identified as 21-year-old Jack Teixeira. FBI agents converged at his Massachusetts home, and heavily armed tactical agents took a man wearing a T-shirt and shorts into custody outside the property.
Today, the Justice Department arrested Jack Douglas Teixeira in connection with an investigation into alleged unauthorized removal, retention, and transmission of classified national defense information. Teixeira is an employee of the United States Air Force National Guard. FBI agents took Teixeira into custody earlier this afternoon without incident. He will have an initial appearance at the U.S. District Court for the District of Massachusetts. I want to thank the FBI, Justice Department prosecutors, and our colleagues at the Department of Defense for their diligent work on this case. This investigation is ongoing. We will share more information at the appropriate time.
That's U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland. North Korea fired an intercontinental ballistic missile Thursday, prompting evacuation warnings in Japan. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul, South Korea.
Emergency alert sounded on Japan's northern island of Hokkaido following a North Korean missile launch. Japanese officials later said the missile fell into the sea between Korea and Japan. But Chief Cabinet Secretary Hirokazu Matsuno said North Korea's launches are a serious security issue for Japanese citizens. The White House called it an ICBM launch that needlessly raises tensions. A separate statement by the U.S. military said the missile posed no threat to the United States or its allies. This is North Korea's third ICBM launch this year. North Korea is upset about joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises, although it often uses those drills as a pretext to conduct major weapons tests. More provocations are expected in the coming weeks. North Korea has vowed to launch a military spy satellite during the month of April. U.S. and South Korean officials also say the North has finished preparations for a nuclear test. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says the Ukraine remains confident about its planned counteroffensive against invading Russian forces, despite the emergence of apparently classified U.S. intelligence documents on the war. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
As the war grinds on in Ukraine, top U.S. officials are seeking to contain the damage from the surfacing of highly classified military documents on the war. The documents include briefing slides mapping out Ukrainian military positions and U.S. assessments of its allies' support for Kyiv. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin told reporters Tuesday no one knows for sure right now where these documents came from.
We take this very seriously. And we will continue to investigate and turn over every rock until we find the source of this and the extent of it.
Asked whether Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky should alter his plans for an expected spring counteroffensive against Russia, Austin had this to say.
They will fight the enemy and not be driven by a specific plan. They have a great plan to start, President Zelensky and his leadership really know the full details of that plan.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was asked about the damage the leaks might cause to the trust of U.S. allies to share intelligence in the future.
Let me just say, with regard to broadly allies and partners and these documents, we have engaged with allies and partners at high levels over the past days, including to reassure them about our own commitment to safeguarding intelligence and, of course, our commitment to our security partnerships.
One of the more damaging leaks pertained to the U.S. and its ally, South Korea. Ben Hodges, the former commander of the U.S. Army in Europe, explained the document to VOA via Skype.
Part one of the leaks was that the U.S. was apparently listening to conversations inside the South Korean government, trying to figure out were the South Koreans going to finally agree to sell ammunition to us that we could either directly give to Ukraine or that we could be used to replace what we gave to Ukraine. So it was just, in that case, I believe it was us listening to the South Korean government, trying to understand what they were thinking.
Another expert told VOA that the leak is not as bad as others in the past, but there is one aspect that he is worried about. Luke Coffey is with the Hudson Institute. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
The one risk, I would say, is the use of this intelligence for information operations or for even disinformation. So we've already seen examples of certain PowerPoint slides with numbers and figures being released, and then seeing a similar slide, PowerPoint slide, with the numbers altered or changed to suit a certain narrative. So then you're going to have this big question about the authenticity of not the initial leak, but of all the documents that are going to now be floating around.
Ukraine's defense ministry has accused Russia of being behind the leaks. Intelligence experts say the leaked document with casualty numbers was altered to cut the number of Russian soldiers killed by more than half before surfacing on pro-Russian Telegram channels. A Kremlin spokesperson said Moscow was well aware that the United States and NATO were involved in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine before the leak surfaced. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Thank you, Cindy. And highly accurate and maneuverable U.S. howitzers have been helping the armed forces of Ukraine fight off Russia's aggression since July 2022. These days, the weapons are used mostly in the Bakhmut district and in the next region. Anna Kudyshchenko has the story.
323. Soldier announces coordinates of the next target. On the battlefield, a U.S. M777 howitzer. Such battles can last for hours, explains the senior officer of the battery.
The enemy can fire 40 to 50 missiles back at us. We experienced it once. We were shelled for 3 hours. And in 3 hours, trust me, even a Soviet system can hit the target.
In 2014, this fighter, who goes by the call sign Musician, participated in the joint forces operations against Russian-backed separatists in the Donbas region of Ukraine. After 2 years there, he returned to civilian life, his job as a sales agent in Ternopil, and his band. After a few years, Russia started its full-scale offensive against Ukraine, and he had to leave his peaceful life again. On February 26, 2022, he volunteered for the front lines in the Donetsk region. Here he learned how to use the M777 howitzer.
You need less than a minute to make a shot.
On the front lines, the M777 howitzer significantly strengthened the position of Ukrainian defenders, says Colonel Sergei Chervati, spokesman for Ukraine's Eastern Group of Forces.
The more accurate and powerful your shots at the enemy are, the more chances you have to win the battle and the war.
Ukrainian fighters also learned how to use the American M119 light howitzer. a fighter who goes by the call sign Perlina, commands his artillery battery brigade. He is a professional artilleryman from the Kharkiv region and has studied at the Hetman Petro Sahaidachny National Ground Forces Academy. Perlina has been fighting since 2014. Since the start of the Russia's invasion, he has helped liberate the Kyiv and Kharkiv regions and now fights in the Bakhmut district.
Since 2014, we gained some skills in the military. Our country can show the Russian Federation its strength.
Perlina says his fighters are in constant combat readiness to cover the back of Ukrainian infantry and shoot at the enemy. And there is nothing better for that than M119 and M777 howitzers. Anna Kostyuchenko, VOA News, Donetsk region, Ukraine.
U.S. President Joe Biden is in ancestral home, Ireland, where he will spend the next 2 days meeting with leaders and family members. Earlier on Wednesday in Belfast, Northern Ireland, he urged for the collapsed power-sharing government to be restored in a speech hailing 25 years of peace in the region under the Good Friday Agreement. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadaskuwara has the story.
For an American president who loves to highlight his Irish heritage, it was a homecoming.
Every time I've come, the welcome, the people on the streets, they're just so gracious to us.
Thousands of people lined up to catch a glimpse of Joe Biden.
Even though it's raining in Ireland, the sun's shining really in our hearts. And there's no show like a Joe show.
Biden toured Carlingford Castle, the last Irish landmark his great-great-grandfather Owen Finnegan saw as he sailed for New York in 1849. Biden spoke with locals, retelling the story of Finnegan and Joseph Kearney, former President Barack Obama's great-great-grandfather, both shoemakers from nearby counties who emigrated to the U.S. around the same time.
In all their dreams, I'm not sure they could have imagined that 175 years later, both their great-great-grandsons would be president of the United States of America, Barack Obama and Joe Biden.
Earlier Wednesday, across the border in Belfast, Northern Ireland, Biden hailed 25 years of peace under the Good Friday Agreement that ended the conflict over whether the region should unify with Ireland or remain part of the United Kingdom. He urged for the power-sharing government that has collapsed under boycott and political infighting to be restored.
As a friend, I hope it's not too presumptuous for me to say that I believe democratic institutions established through the Good Friday Agreement remain critical to the future of Northern Ireland.
If power sharing is restored, he suggested more investments from American companies will come, a message echoed by British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak.
We talked about the investment potential that is there, the companies that want to invest in Northern Ireland. I think that's incredibly exciting. It'll bring growth, jobs and prosperity to Northern Ireland. And I know he shares my ambition to see the institutions here back up and running. That's what people and businesses in Northern Ireland deserve.
On Thursday, Biden holds talks with Irish leaders, ending his trip with a Friday night speech in Ballina, home of his paternal ancestors on the west coast of Ireland. Patsy Wadaskuwara, VOA News, Washington.
In other news, aid workers in Ethiopia says Amhara regional forces have displaced tens of thousands of ethnic Tigrayans from disputed territory in the north of the country in recent weeks, despite a peace deal last year. The Mai Sebri area in northwestern Tigray is close to the regional border with Amhara. It changed hands several times during the war, which erupted in 2020 and ended with a ceasefire in November. The Amhara people claim the area as their own. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is visiting Vietnam later this week. Blinken's first trip to Hanoi as the top U.S. diplomat comes as the two countries are eyeing an upgrade in bilateral ties to a strategic partnership. Blinken will also break ground at a new U.S. embassy compound. State Department Bureau Chief Nike Cheng has more from Hanoi, Vietnam.
The United States and Vietnam celebrate the 10th anniversary of their comprehensive partnership this year. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's visit to Vietnam follows a phone call between leaders of the two countries in late March. Andrika Natalegawa is an associate fellow for the Southeast Asia program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
Part of these discussions include mutual visits by leaders on both sides to each other's capitals. It's to be determined when exactly those will take place, but based on the call between President Biden and General Secretary Trung, there's certainly a lot of mutual interest in making that happen at some point this year.
Trung was among the first foreign leaders to visit Beijing last October, after Chinese President Xi Jinping started his third term as a Chinese Communist Party leader. The U.S. has been ready to upgrade its relationship with Vietnam to the next level, a strategic partnership. Hanoi has held back, though, in part over concerns about the reaction from China, analysts say. Andrew Wellsdon is a senior expert at the United States Institute of Peace. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
Vietnam does not want to send a signal to China that they're becoming too much closer to the U.S. Or another way of saying that is that in the past, whenever U.S.-Vietnam relations have taken a step forward, Vietnam has been careful to advance relations with China at the same time.
Secretary of State Blinken's first visit to Vietnam comes after Blinken's meetings with senior Vietnamese officials during the U.S.-ASEAN summit last May and Vice President Kamala Harris' visit to the country in 2021. Nike Chin, VOA News, Hanoi, Vietnam.
Ghana has become the first country to approve a new malaria vaccine described as, quote, world changer, unquote, by scientists who developed it at the University of Oxford. The mosquito-spread parasite kills more than 600,000 people every year. The majority are children in sub-Saharan Africa, and Kent Mensah reports from Accra, Ghana.
A statement issued Wednesday by Oxford University says its new malaria vaccine, called R21, has secured regulatory approval by Ghanaian officials for use in the age group at highest risk of death from malaria, children aged 5 to 36 months. Malaria is an endemic disease in Ghana. The West African country's health service says it accounts for 38% of all outpatients, with the most vulnerable groups being children under 5 years of age. Dr. Katie Iwa, head of malaria immunology and professor of vaccine immunology at the Jenner Institute at the University of Oxford.
We've tested a lot of vaccines, and to be here now to have a vaccine that has been approved for use in Ghana is fantastic. It's what we've all been working very hard towards. So R21 has higher efficacy, about 75% in the data from the phase 2 trial. We think perhaps the durability of the response is better as well.
Ghana was one of three African countries in 2019 to have piloted the first malaria vaccine, known as RTS. But public acceptance of the vaccine, according to health officials, was somewhat below target due to hesitancy among parents linked to a fear of the unknown. Iwa says having more malaria vaccines now on the market helps parents make a better choice.
Having more than one vaccine available is a really good thing. So I think it's good news that we've now got a second malaria vaccine approved. And so people can trust that these vaccines are safe to use. And I hope that people trust the vaccine and will take it up and see for themselves the effect it has.
The World Health Organization says a child dies every minute from malaria in Africa, where it is estimated that 9 out of 10 malaria deaths occur. It is hoped that the new vaccine will help Ghanaian and African children combat malaria. Dr. Nana Yaopipra, the head of the National Malaria Control Program in Ghana, told VOA that the Oxford vaccine is coming at the right time.
The vaccine has a role in the elimination agenda because it reduces the risk of people having the disease and also its severe form. And the vaccine are for children. If you allow your child to be given this vaccine, the risk of this child, which is actually in the vulnerable group, of the risk of getting malaria really reduces.
Nearly half of the world's population is at risk of malaria. In 2020, an estimated 241 million people in 85 countries contracted malaria. That same year, the WHO says the disease claimed approximately 627,000 lives. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including congressional sources say leaked top secret documents revealing that Ukraine could run out of air defense missiles within weeks are putting pressure on the Biden administration and NATO allies to increase support for the war effort. We'll examine this story and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter, who is to blame for the fall of Kabul to the Taliban. A recent after-action report from the Biden White House blames former President Donald Trump's administration for most of the turmoil that led to the chaotic U.S. withdrawal. We ask two South Asian experts about this assessment and take stock of Afghanistan's political, economic, and social situation. An update on Afghanistan next, this Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedofo in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Alexis de Tocqueville, the 19th century French diplomat, political philosopher, and historian, once said that media is how we maintain civilization, noted USAID Administrator Samantha Power recently. That is high praise, she said, and speaks to the indispensability of the media. And she stressed that independent media is facing existential challenges at the moment. One of them is a direct onslaught from autocrats.
Autocrats target independent media because information empowers us. This is not, as they say, a bug. This is a design feature of repressive rule. And whether people are resisting an invasion, whether they are campaigning to replace corrupt leaders with reformers, taking on climate change, collective action really cannot begin without a collective understanding of the challenges and opportunities in front of us.
What's noteworthy and maybe gets a little bit less attention, said Administrator Power, is that for all of the declining indicators among human rights and civil liberties tracked by the research group Freedom House, freedom of the media and freedom of expression have declined the most.
In the past 17 years, the number of countries that have a score of 0 out of 4 on the media freedom indicator has more than doubled, from 14 to 33. And again, that aligns with the 17 straight years of freedom in decline. Powerful people who seek to control the narrative spread inaccurate information to drown out the truth. They silence journalists.
The second existential challenge to independent media is a financial health crisis resulting from a rapidly transforming media environment. The United States is partnering with fellow democracies to try to recognize these two distinct challenges and come up with tools to address them, said Samantha Power. For one, USAID is partnering with Microsoft, Internews, and companies and organizations to launch a public-private partnership to help small media companies transition to an online subscription basis to help make these outlets viable, even profitable. Then there are corrupt and repressive actors who use protracted lawsuits to drive small, underfunded, independent media outlets out of business. To help such outlets defend themselves and continue publishing even while under attack, USAID and its partners have founded Reporters Shield, a pooled public insurance fund intended to defend reporters and NGOs from legal threats meant to silence criticism. I want to use this occasion as a call to action for anyone who finds this intriguing, said Administrator Power, and would like you to get involved or to join.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.